He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
The roads are open in Rhode Island, or Rhode Island is open for the roads, and the roads are crowded. That is the first part of this show's report from outside the immediate broadcast area. And I sensed it and faced it yesterday. That was a Saturday when I actually did this. No, not yesterday, but it doesn't matter. And there are lines at all the intersections getting through. People are shopping like crazy. Turns out that I didn't know it, that Rhode Island's been open about a month.
Yeah.
I also have dined at indoors at a restaurant that also had outdoor and indoor dining. The tables are spaced appropriately apart, but the places are busy, which is wonderful. And I think this is spreading to the automobile sales department. Jay may have more to say about this when I let him on. And it just goes to show, I think, that if the we don't have a rebound or what do you want to call it, in the pandemic situation, we can get ourselves back on our feet countrywide a lot quicker than all the predictions might be. Jay,
well, don't know about the predictions, but I do want to chime in and just
okay.
say that there has been a tremendous, if you follow these things, there's been a tremendous, shall we say, pent-up demand that manifested first and foremost in Europe. Actually, it manifested first and foremost in China, and then it manifested in Europe, and it is working its way across in the same way that the virus did. So
at the same time, there is some rebound in the virus, and this is going to be an interesting thing to watch in our country, at least, probably is worldwide, as to whether or not it's going to put a hiccup in the recovery situation. So, at any rate, I'm very positive on that. I think the auto sales department is positive in many of the manufacturers and dealerships around the country, if we stick to U.S. at the moment. I know it's happening in U.S., I mean in Europe and China as well, as you just said, Joe. Jay, I think, probably has something to say about this. So, Jay, come on in.
Well, I think we know, as far as auto sales are concerned, that right now used car sales are booming. And part of the reason is that new car supplies are not necessarily in tune with what the demand of the market is. So, yes, we started manufacturing cars again. So the supply chain is flowing again, but people are not necessarily finding the new cars that they want. So there's a big demand. Dealerships that sell both new cars and used cars have seen an increase, a better rebound in the sales of used cars. I've read things on that this is a short-term thing. We're about to see the used car market being flooded by gazillions of fleet vehicles from the companies like Hertz and other big fleets that are either downsizing or just closing up shops. So it's hard to tell where the car market is going in the medium to long term. Yes, there's a rebound now. I don't know where I'm not necessarily doom and gloom or skeptical, but I think there's going to be major adjustments to the market for some time to come.
Well, you know, as far as supplies go with new vehicles, I have monitored two dealerships, one a major General Motors dealership on the Route 22 corridor to New York from the Northwest Connecticut corner. And the other one is a major, also General Motors and FCA Jeep Dodge dealership in the Northwest Connecticut corner of Tarrington. And since my primary interest was in a vehicle I own a couple of, the Jeep Cherokees, I was interested to watch this supply of Jeep Cherokees, which the dealership had loaded up on before the the virus hit. I was sort of watching it to see if it was diminishing at any time during the course of the shutdown, and or since the shutdown has been lightening up. And I will say, on the General Motors dealership going to New York, which was loaded with GM Chevrolet Silverado pickup trucks, they have moved just about the entire inventory that I was used to seeing on the side, parked in the meadows there beside the dealership, has diminished to, I would say, less than two dozen trucks, where there might have been 100 or more as recently as like 3 months ago. And what tells me that the production startup of General Motors, which has been emphasizing SUVs and pickup trucks, inventory has not started to reflow into that dealership to restock what is now somewhat of an empty meadow.
No, and we know the constant here is that pickup truck sales have remained strong and will probably continue to remain strong for probably forever. That's just...
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah, so...
Seeing as it crosses, pickup trucks cross the entire spectrum of ownership from the well-heeled people in Beverly Hills, California, and maybe Texas, and the ranchers in Texas that buy the loaded, top-of-the-line versions of all the pickup trucks, to the contractors who buy anything that they can afford from the least well-equipped vehicles, although I see many contractors seem to get them fairly well-equipped, to the fully well-equipped, the fully equipped versions. So, yes, pickup trucks have remained a stably strong factor in the dealer's sales and the manufacturer's sales. So, of course, they want to restock those depleted pipelines.
So,
on the Jeep front, in Tarrington, the Cherokee inventory has diminished very little, in my opinion. I didn't take an exact count of the start, so I can't tell anybody, and nobody really cares, that they've down 24 out of 50 vehicles or whatever it is. But I measure it by the what I know the stock consisted of in terms of options and pricing. And much of that stock that I saw 12 weeks ago is still sitting there on the sidelines, unsold, or at least so far unsold. Now, admittedly, you get to the point of, are these vehicles equipped for what people want or not? And that is the big question, Jay, you bring up, is if people don't want what the dealers have, they don't move them no matter what time of year it is, unless they put big incentives on it. And Car and Driver's latest issue had an article on, which was written 9 weeks ago, or however many weeks it is before the actual magazine shows up in our mailboxes, about it was a good time to buy cars if you had the good credit and if you could find what you wanted, because dealers were not selling vehicles, and therefore they were offering, and manufacturers were offering, stupidly good incentives, but stupidly long incentives in the form of 84-month financing terms, 0%, in lieu of cash rebates. And some of the manufacturers were offering small cash rebates along with 0% financing. And there's some evidence that Hyundai and a couple of other manufacturers who had stocked their dealers with cars have had better than average, or at least better than not good, sales figures for those vehicles that they had on their dealers' lots because of the extremely interesting incentives to get people to go into debt. And I say go into debt is what it amounts to, because the vehicles are tending towards $40,000 and up, as opposed to $24,000 and up. And when you go into debt for 84 months with 0%, some of them are zero down, zero security deposit, and this is a VW venture that seems to come up periodically, and zero whatever it is, buyout at the end, you don't put a dollar down and you are in debt for 84 months or 72 months or whatever it is. And that is one way they have been countermanding the lack of demand, if people are savvy enough to do it online and really want a new car. But be as it may, the country is opening up, and Jay, you've got a number of topics to go to, so let's
jump right into a couple of something that I wanted to talk about and came up to my attention last week. Is now that the country is quote unquote reopening and people are getting back on the roads, it is a season where a lot of people are towing either trailers or recreational vehicles or boats.
Indeed,
or
they are.
Race cars or whatever it may be. And I talked with somebody just recently, and they were saying, oh, yeah, and this person has a perfectly nice small SUV and is moving across the country and told me, yeah, I'm going to trade it in and get a truck because I have to rent a trailer to cross the country, and this vehicle is only rated for 1,500 pounds of towing. And I'm like, well, why do you want to buy a new car or vehicle? Well, it can only tow 1,500 pounds. Well, the short story is people who have a need to tow, I find often tend to go overboard and get a vehicle that's,
oversized,
unnecessarily oversized for
right.
for their needs. So, yes, you don't want to tow my trailer is a 26-foot trailer that can weigh up to 6,000 pounds. Obviously, you need a vehicle to tow that, but most people would say, when they see my trailer, say, oh, so you have a pickup truck. No, I don't have a pickup truck. I have a midsize SUV that's rated to tow over 7,000 pounds, and I tow my 6,000-pound trailer with it, and it works just fine.
And you
fine.
Have no trouble either, but the question I have with some of that is whether the tail wags the dog a little bit during the towing process, and if it's properly equipped, that will not be a problem, correct?
That's correct. You can tow trailers with small to mid-sized vehicles, depending on what you're doing. And so, you know, if you're renting a U-Haul trailer, and I mention U-Haul by name because in all the van rental business, there are a bunch of vendors out there, but in companies that just rent trailers, moving trailers.
U-Haul
is pretty much the only one that I see.
Yes, I've noticed
on a national
too.
Basis
I agree.
That does that. And their little trailers are great for towing. If you have a kid going out to college, you know, across the country, like my daughter did 2 years ago, we got it's an 8-foot long trailer for 4 or 5 foot wide, and towed it with her little Subaru Impreza. And you just, I always say, just go with the flow. If you're going uphill, you just don't, overtax the engine and the transmission, and just, slow it down, take your time, but it'll get you there. And
yeah.
So this person that I spoke with last week actually thanked me and said, okay, well, I scrapped the plans of getting in debt and buying a, bigger SUV or a pickup truck just to tow a rental trailer around across the country.
Proper sizing is important in all this, and you bring it up. I was going to ask you if you could go into some of the things you watch out for when you're towing your rig. Just for people's, as part of sort of the safety situation. Do you change the speed at which you drive? I've chased you up Route 22 one time, and I won't say that you were changing the speed at all. And I'm curious as to whether or not you have advice for people who are towing something like 6,000 pounds behind them if they've never towed anything in their life.
Well, 6,000 pounds is a lot of weight, right?
Yeah.
So any trailer that weighs more than 3,000 pounds that you're towing has to have its own brakes. And
okay.
And it's critical. So with my 6,000-pound trailer, I have brakes on the trailer. I have a hand controller in the car. I can actually slow the vehicle and the trailer down just on the trailer brakes by using a button on my controller. It's actually quite interesting to do. I don't suggest people do it because you're taxing the trailer brakes, but it's a good test. And yes, you need good brakes. I mean, my scariest moment towing was a few years ago. I was driving a 40-foot RV cross country, and I keep saying it was the best year of my life. And I was towing a 20-foot trailer behind that, or an 18-foot trailer behind that. And I was on I-80 going down into Salt Lake City. And there were signs that saying, steep hill, all these signs you see for big trucks. And I kind of dismissed it, and all of a sudden I'm going down the hill, and the weight of the 40-foot RV and the 20-foot trailer behind it all of a sudden I found myself really, scrambling to slow down the vehicle. So you really have to be very aware of the weight of the vehicle. And if you have long downhills, you really have to take it slowly. And yes, your braking distance and your stopping distance increases probably 2, 3, 4-fold.
So the faster you're going when you start the braking process, right?
Yes.
And you certainly don't want to get into an emergency braking process going down a long grade, let's say going to Salt Lake or going to Denver from the passes, and where there's wind as well as incline or decline. You do not want to overheat the brakes. Incidentally, are trailer brakes disc or are they drum?
They're drum brakes.
Are drum brakes better, actually?
No, disc brakes are always better, but
trailers have not started putting disc brakes on them instead of drums. Is that correct,
yeah.
Mostly?
The other thing I would say is, you know, the biggest annoyance with trailers is, even before you start trailering, is checking the lights and making sure they work, and it is always an issue. It is always an issue. The electric system is always a little problematic, and if you haven't used your trailer in a while, or you're towing a new trailer behind a vehicle, or new to your tow package, if you're before you get going, you want to plug it in and make sure that the lights work, that the signals work.
Right.
That's always my biggest concern. And even on my trailer, which is brand new, it's a couple of years old, from the get-go, every 3-4 times I turn the car on and put the lights on, there's one light that doesn't work. And
has it been a bulb issue, or has it been just a contact issue?
Well, it's and in new cars, sometimes it's just the whole setup, and sometimes just shutting the engine off and restarting it, and all the lights and signals.
Oh, computers. Yeah.
But always check your signals and make sure that the blinkers actually work on the trailer.
Did your tow vehicle come with the trailer hitch system already attached, or did you have it put in?
So, yeah, and people, you may know or not know, I towed this with a 2015 VW Touareg, and it came with a hitch, but
and wiring
not the electrical system. So you still have to get an electrical system for the trailer. And on many, bigger SUVs or luxury SUVs, a bunch of them make them out of the factory with very capable hitches. So, and if you don't have a hitch, it can be anywhere from $200 to $500 to get a hitch
right.
installed on your vehicle.
Well, I looked into a hitch for my Jeep Cherokee, one of my Cherokees, and I was quoted $750. And,
yeah, that's about right. Are you getting a boat?
Once you get the labor and putting it in wiring and all that. And of course, all these new vehicles have different, as you maybe suggested or I'm inferring, computers monitoring all the electrical systems now besides the physical connection of the trailer to the wiring harness in the vehicle. So your idea of turning off the ignition, waiting 10 or 20 seconds maybe if you have to wait that long, and then turning it back on can reset something that a computer has discovered in the wiring system and maybe has one side of the electrical, the lighting out or something, as you suggested, with one of your lights was out one time, and yet it fixed itself with a restart.
Before we go, I'm probably going to be running out of time. I want to bring up, and I've brought it up last week or the week before, but this is also the time of year when kids get out of school, a bunch of graduations going on, and teenagers get back or get on the road for the first time. And, we know of this fatal accident that happened in our, in our area, was it in Torrington? 4 teenagers from Litchfield were in a car and crashed, and I believe 2 died as a consequence. And Jill, you may have more information than we actually have on that.
The upshot is the upshot, which is...
Okay, the upshot is the upshot is... I keep reading about this, and it's what we do, and we all know of... what we call defensive driving programs, and I hate the word defensive because it really is about a proactive driving set of skills that we need to acquire and that young teenagers need to acquire when they're driving. But the major factors in teen crashes are, you know, it's usually these crashes have things in common. Kids are not wearing seatbelts. Why are they not wearing seatbelts? They are either under the influence of either drugs or alcohol, neither of which they should be doing. First of all, it's illegal. So my question is always, how do kids get, what is the sequence of events that led kids to be in that position anyway? What could we have done so that they don't find themselves in the position of crashing? Everything that comes after the crash, you know, the better the car is, the more safety features the car has, all that are post-crash factors that can help mitigate the consequences of the crash and come out alive. But what can we do before the kids get into this situation? And a lot of it has to do with parent modeling. And you know, if we as parents, you know, wear our seatbelts all the time, since, you know, from day one when the kids are aware of what's going on, I think, you know, we have to lead by example. And a lot of that, I you know, a lot of it starts with how we behave on the road and how we treat you know, our
the safety and things we need to do. That's basically what you're saying.
But there is no simple solution, and it's frustrating.
Well, the driver training programs, and we've talked about this off and on, and they are woefully insufficient in terms of teaching kids. These are the driving programs that you see done in high schools and all that. There's no such thing as skid learning really using speed and showing what happens if you're going 100 miles an hour when you brake a car versus going 30 miles an hour. So kids don't have the technological expertise or knowledge about the dynamics of car motion and car action when they get out of the normal comfort zone of just driving along a two-lane road or a four-lane road in with all sorts of other vehicles doing the same thing. But they have no concept of the distance that you should maintain between cars, what happens if you speed. I don't even know what driver tests teach you these days, Jay. I know that parallel parking is now not a requirement in many states. Connecticut
that is
included,
ridiculous.
I think.
It's totally ridiculous because as hard as it is, it teaches you distance and maneuverability, and that's not something that you can learn online or...
Well, now you can buy a car that parks itself for you. So if you're in one of those economic levels of buying such a car, you don't even need to know how to park a car anymore.
You know, in the olden days, even though you had people take care of your horses, it was really considered smart to know what to do so you could keep an eye on what was going on. And that holds as true today as it did 250, 300 years ago. You know, it's very helpful. If you're having someone do something for you, or if your car parks itself, that's great. You still want to know what to do.
When it breaks down, you've got to do it. You can't do it.
So, you know, what do you do? Sit? Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters?
I don't know. Jay, do you have some other things you were going to talk about? Towing? Oh, you do.
Whatever it is, you got just about a minute. So.
Okay.
Well,
that's fine.
So this weekend I did a 24-hour virtual race. And apart from the fact that I think sim racing is great, and there were thousands of teams around the world who participated in this 24 hours of Le Mans, I went about 30 hours without sleep, and I found myself racing at some point in the wee hours of the night, or rather the morning, and becoming increasingly drowsy. And you would think that being so under this adrenaline rush that the drowsiness is not going to affect you.
Wrong.
Totally wrong. And it's back, I'm linking that back to teen safety. Teenagers don't sleep enough. We don't sleep enough. And a lot of crashes are caused by drowsiness and simply because we're not fully rested before we get behind the wheel.
Well, the interesting thing to add to that quickly is I watch TV sometimes at night. Sometimes I found that the TV is on an hour and a half later and I've been asleep. And I was watching TV and I went to sleep fully thinking I wouldn't go to sleep because I was watching TV. So you're saying the same thing. You could be driving along, and all of a sudden you might go to sleep.
Yeah.
Or
happens
certainly,
to...
if you didn't go to sleep, you got drowsy, and your whole reflex situation changes, right?
Yes. Yeah, actually, even if you're not falling asleep, your reflexes are just... You're
slow.
You're slow. Yeah. You're impaired.
Okay.
So.
All right. He is Robin
Leach. Next week.
He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.